your daily dose of debate, breaking news, and uncensored views. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. It is still a great nation despite the outrage in Minneapolis concerning the tragic criminal, apparently, and unnecessary death of George Floyd in police custody. The riots in Minneapolis are out of control and show a, it seems to me, a failure of leadership and a failure of clarity. The response to Floyd's murder has been universal. Universal. And I do use the term murder because there appears to be no possible justification for what happened to this unarmed black male in police custody. We will get to that in just a moment. We're also going to be speaking today. We have the opportunity to speak to Ralph Reed of the Faith and Freedom Coalition. He is going to be talking a little bit about the ongoing struggle about opening up churches, synagogues, mosques, places of worship. We'll be talking to John Fund, who is certainly the nation's leading expert on voting fraud of all kinds, about the idea that we may be facing a very troublesome, nightmarish election with all kinds of questions about its legitimacy, unless, well, we'll talk about that, and we'll be talking to Gordon Chang later about the United States taking an increasingly, and it seems to me appropriately, harsh line about what China is doing against Hong Kong. And the Hong Kong violence and riots heating up. That and much more all coming up on the Medved Show. First off, the situation in Minneapolis. Look, first of all, it has to be clear from the very outset that there is no apparent defense for the four police officers involved in the killing of this individual. George Floyd, by the way, was a former high school football star, and he really was a high school football star, a key member of a team that went 13-2 and went to the state finals for the championship in Texas, where he grew up in the Houston area. And he was made it very clear that he couldn't breathe, that he was in trouble. And for several minutes, when you watch the video, you can see the officer who has been identified, who almost surely will be indicted and probably should be arrested soon, as the mayor of Minneapolis, Jacob Frey, has called for. All of that is going on, but none of that can justify the riots that have scarred the city of Minneapolis, which, by the way, is one of America's more functional cities often. But this is a description of a woman who was filming some of the fires that were deliberately set last night. There were over 30 deliberately set fires that the first responders, the fire department, put out last night in the city of Minneapolis. Listen to what is going on here.
Holy building that's like five stories tall. That's like five-story tall building right there that's completely engulfed. Yes, now Wendy's. Wendy's is on fire, y'all. Wendy's is on fire. That thing completely gone. Look at that. That's a five-story building. I don't know how big y'all can tell that is, but that's a big ass. They're not sending the fire department in because it's too dangerous, apparently.
Okay, and part of that danger was the protesters who were using fireworks and pointing them at cops, in addition to throwing rocks, bottles, bricks, and attacking police officers. An ABC affiliate in Minneapolis visited places that were looted and set ablaze, and you can hear a reporter documenting the devastation that had occurred with various stores.
I want to point you here to the right-hand side of the screen. We're going to get close to this tobacco shop. This is right along Chicago and Lake Street. And can you see all of the garbage and the cans and office equipment and whatever was inside these stores is absolutely littered the streets. Our car, the tires of our car are crunching as we're driving down the street because there is so much garbage and debris. I've probably seen five people walking around the neighborhood here who are holding some kind of electronic equipment, either computers or DVDs. You can see some people here right in the intersection of Chicago and Lake. Every direction I look, I see people still up, still at it.
Okay, and a lot of people have probably seen the video, which is horrifying, of looters in a Target store, just basically cleaning it out. And what I was thinking of when I was watching that and seeing people just smashing stuff in the Target store and then walking out with TVs and other goods, just basically stealing. When you watch people destroying a store like that, I was thinking about all those people who work in a store like a Target to clean up after the workday is done, to make sure that the aisles are clean and ready for you, to keep a retail establishment going. This is not an easy time for retail. And given the fact that one of the complaints that you hear about minority neighborhoods all the time is that there aren't a lot of retail alternatives, does this kind of thing encourage people to open up in a neighborhood where it seems to me it is, to the best of my knowledge, they have not made significant numbers of arrests yet. They should, for people who committed arson, who committed theft, who committed looting. Because as horrible as the death of George Floyd was, there is no excuse, none, zero, zip, nada, for what is going on here. The Ben Shapiro had a good tweet, which I retweeted, actually, and basically saying, look, if you break into a Target store and walk out with a TV, that doesn't make you a civil rights hero. It makes you a POS, especially at a time like this. The former police commissioner of New York City, Bernard Kerik, who was one of the people who's credited with bringing the crime rate way down in New York, actually spoke on Fox about how horrific this killing was that provoked all the violence. This is Bernard Kerik. It's cut number six, Jeremy.
I don't think anybody has the answer because it defies logic. It defies common sense. It defies training. It defies arrest policies and procedures. There was no resistance. I'm curious as to, they took him out of the car, they sat him down, then all of a sudden he winds up in this position with this guy's foot on his neck, his knee on his neck. Why? How did he get there? Why did he get there? Why did they keep his leg on his neck as long as he did? The guy's crying out that he can't breathe. You know, I am one, as you are, to give the men and women in law enforcement the benefit of the doubt. In this case, this is atrocious. This was an abusive use of force. It was a killing of someone that should not have died. This guy was in handcuffs. This guy was already
put him in the car.
Contained. He was not resisting in any way. He
None.
Was suffering. I don't.
Okay, this is a very important. He wasn't resisting. There's no excuse for it. So has the president responded? He has. And you know what? He's responded very well and very appropriately. We will get to that and more on the MedVet Show. 1-800-955-1776. Medved show talking about the tragic and apparently criminal death of a unarmed black man. He happened to be 6'6", a former multi-sports star at Yates High School in Houston. And I mention that because reading about George Floyd's entire life, he's 46 years old at the time that he was killed. And he had had a hard and complicated life, which is, for somebody with the kind of athletic gifts that he apparently had, being a star, literally, at high school, football and basketball, it's a very sad story. And, of course, a sad and horrifying ending to that story. I mentioned before that I thought the president had responded appropriately to this. He sent out a tweet actually yesterday when this case was just becoming known. And President Trump said, at my request, the FBI and the Department of Justice are already well into an investigation as to the very sad and tragic death in Minnesota of George Floyd. I have asked for this investigation to be expedited and greatly appreciate all the work done by local law enforcement. My heart goes out to George's family and friends. Justice will be served. Okay, that's exactly right. And the right tone. The tone by Mayor Jacob Frey of Minneapolis was not the right tone. This was the mayor, it's Minneapolis. He's a liberal mayor, young, charismatic, supposed to be a rising star in Minnesota politics. He doesn't deserve it. Listen to him on CNN with Chris Cuomo talking about the killing of George Floyd.
We need to have honesty right now, and we need to have action. I mean, that video that was just referenced was horrid. I mean, for 5 straight minutes, a white officer on our police department pressed his knee into the neck of a black man who was handcuffed, who was no threat, and was articulating very clearly how he was impacted, how his physical health was being damaged, and how he couldn't breathe. This is not an instance of 1 or 2 seconds where you're forced to make a split decision. This is like 5 minutes. It's 300 seconds. And in any one of those seconds, you could have decided just to stop. You could have decided to listen to community.
Okay, there were people on the side who were saying, let him go, he can't breathe, he's in trouble. And there's nothing wrong with a person in the press or in the community or even a political leader saying, there's no justification for this, this looks horrible, this deserves criminal action, and we'll get criminal action. But then to go on from there, to the second point that Jacob Frey made, quote, attempting to put this in a larger context, he sailed way over the top. This is the mayor of Minneapolis on CNN with Chris Cuomo. Listen.
And you pointed out something that is correct, Chris, which is, you know, this is not just about this one instance. This is not just about that 5 minutes of time. We're talking about 400 years worth of this kind of racism. We're talking about 400 years worth of practices that this incident has stood on. And, you know, justice is the first step in this case, but it's not just about this case, and we still have a long way to go.
Okay, we have a long way to go before we know whether this case was, in fact, the product of racism. And that's part of the problem that I have here. Is, in other words, police officers, everybody should acknowledge, have a hard job. They don't always do it well. But what's ironic to me is that this is in Minneapolis. And you may remember, it was literally just 2 years ago that a black cop in Minneapolis was convicted of third-degree murder. He was acquitted of second-degree murder for killing an unarmed white woman. Black cop's name was Mohammed Noor. He's a Somali-American. And with no explanation at all, there was none. He shot this white woman, and he was, and by the way, he'll be out of prison soon because he was convicted on the lowest possible charge. He got a maximum 25-year sentence, but no one serves in Minnesota the maximum sentence for the crime to which he was convicted. Now, look, he says he was frightened. He didn't know if the woman was going to pull, and she was an Australian woman, and this became an international incident. Her name was Rusick, Justine Rusick. And it took 2 years before they actually convicted Officer Noor, even though he was very clearly guilty, as it appears that the officer here, the white officer, is very clearly guilty. But making everything a racial incident is appalling to me. And yesterday, the mayor tweeted, Jacob Fry, if most people, particularly people of color, had done what a police officer did late Monday, they'd already be behind bars. Okay. What about Officer Noor? He was also given the benefit of the doubt because he's a police officer and he was black. That's why today I'm calling on Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman to charge the arresting officer in that case. He should be charged. But the idea that this somehow necessitates or justifies the kind of rioting that we've seen. Actually, the idea of finding someone to blame here, other than the specific cop involved, to make this a thing in general for police officers. Look, this is something we've covered on this show before. It is simply not true that this only happens to black males. I just mentioned a case in Minneapolis in the same city. And it was a case from a year ago that he was convicted. It took him 2 years. It was actually, the case occurred in July of 2017. But historical data gathered by the Washington Post. In 2019, the most recent year for which data is available, there were 9 unarmed black men who died at the hands of police officers. Unarmed black men, 9. That's 9 too many. There were 19 unarmed white men who died at the hands of police in 2019. That perspective is important. We'll talk about this more. We'll also be speaking with Ralph Reed coming up about the desire to reopen churches and synagogues on the MedVed Show. And whether you like it or not, and the American people, you almost unanimously, I mean, overwhelmingly like it, we are rolling back the lockdown everywhere. All 50 states have begun making progress in that regard. And one of the key elements of that, as we approach what is in the Jewish tradition, a holiday weekend, is reopening churches and synagogues. And that's, at least with some conditions, beginning to happen pretty much everywhere. I wanted to speak about that with my friend Ralph Reed. Ralph, it's actually Dr. Reed. He is a historian. He's a professor, has a doctorate in history. And he is also the head of the Faith and Freedom Coalition. And Ralph, it's great to speak to you. I hope you and your family are okay during the pandemic.
Everybody's well, Michael. It's good to be back with you.
Thank you. Thank you. And Ralph is also the author of, most recently, For God and Country, The Christian Case for Trump. Generally, are you, I know you're pleased to see that most states are opening up, allowing a little bit more room to breathe for religious institutions. Do you think that has been a general trend in the United States, or are there some exceptions where there's still evidence of anti-religious, one could even say discrimination, in terms of the way the rules are being implemented?
Oh, I think we've definitely seen that, Michael. We saw a situation in Virginia where 15 Christians meeting in a recovery group that they relied upon for their own recovery, whether it was alcohol or other chemical addictions, were prohibited from meeting in a church that could hold over 200, where they were complying with all the public health protocols. From Mississippi to Minnesota to California.
I know the story in Kentucky of basically breaking up people who were trying to do drive-by worship.
Right, and we've seen this around the country, and that's why I make the argument so strenuously in For God and Country that Christians made the right decision. It was a tough call. I'm not going to lie about that, and they wrestled with it. But they made the right call in backing President Trump for two reasons that are particularly salient during this pandemic. Number one, the fact that he was going to appoint judges to the federal courts who were originalists and constitutionalists. And secondly, that he was a strong supporter of religious freedom. And through him personally, Michael, calling so eloquently last Friday for the governors and local officials in the country to allow churches to reopen and other houses of worship, and through his Attorney General, Bill Barr, going into federal court with the full strength of the Justice Department to defend the First Amendment right to freedom of religion, and so eloquently saying that there's not an exception in the First Amendment for a public health crisis. It's good to have friends of the faith community in the Oval Office and in the Justice Department. And we have that because we voted for Donald Trump.
Okay, let me just challenge you on this, because I really think to make a with churches of every different denomination and synagogues of every different denomination trying to decide when and how and where to open up or come back, is it really a great idea to make this a political issue? In other words, there are a lot of Democratic governors right now who have signed off on reopening churches, and
sure.
Again, that's a victory for America. It's a victory for America against the pandemic. It's a victory for American common sense. But doesn't it, in a way, diminish that to say that the entire lesson of this episode is that you should vote for one candidate or another?
I would certainly agree that would be a mistake. I'm not arguing that the totality of the lesson that we take away from this pandemic and the way we've had such an unprecedented, and let's be honest, Michael, voluntary, for the most part, closure of houses of worship. Churches
Absolutely.
And synagogues, and they didn't do this because they were ordered to. They did it because no one cares more than they do about the health and safety of their congregants and co-religionists. I was just simply making the point that the bully pulpit of the office of the presidency matters. The rhetorical function of that office is one of its most powerful aspects. And by Donald Trump saying to the nation behind the presidential seal that houses of worship should be allowed to reopen. It matters. It's consequential. It sets the tone for the culture. And to have the Justice Department being willing to go into federal court to defend our rights as Americans, rights that have been purchased with the blood of patriots, that is important. And those things happened because Donald Trump won in 2016. Bill Barr would not be Attorney General. And if you think that I'm being hyperbolic or partisan, just remember what the Obama Justice Department did. They sued the Little Sisters of the Poor. They went before the Supreme Court, Michael, and argued that a Christian school in Washington State should not be allowed to hire and fire their own teachers.
Oh, no, there's much worse. If you want to go back and talk about the history of the Obama administration and their treatment of religion and their religious intolerance, basically trying to replace religious faith with a secular orthodoxy, you're talking about all kinds of extremism that was typical of the Eric Holder and Barack Obama Justice Departments. Absolutely true. But the question that I would ask is, going forward, as churches are reopening, there are many wonderful religious institutions that are not reopening so quickly for the reasons that you specified before. I would imagine that in the Faith and Freedom Coalition, you have pastors who are affiliated who are reluctant to immediately throw the doors back open and to reinstitute services with all the trimmings that we've had before.
Oh, yeah. In fact, not only Faith and Freedom Coalition member churches, but my own church in Atlanta. We were originally scheduled to reopen in early June, and that's now being rescheduled for later in the summer. But I think what I appreciate is that our governor never ordered the churches closed. The decision was left to the churches and to their board of elders. And that's what I think. Look, no one cares more about the health of their members than rabbis, priests, and pastors. And all I'm saying, Michael, is to the greatest extent possible, because of the First Amendment and because of the constitutional rights, let's allow those decisions to be made by people of faith and not by government officials.
Well, to that, I can only say amen. Ralph Reed is the author, most recently, of For God and Country, The Christian Case for Trump. You can find out more about that book and about his work at michaelmedved.com. Coming up, more on the situation in Minneapolis. Minneapolis is also the home of the very controversial Ilhan Omar, the member of the squad. We will get to her and more coming up on the MedVed Show.
Become a MedHead and receive 50% off History Store downloads for all annual members. Join today at michaelmedved.com. 1-800-955-1776. The Michael Medved Show. That's 1-800-955-1776.
Medved Show, there's always interest, at least there is on my part, and I assume on yours, on any issue that can possibly be polarized, and how on a given issue Ilhan Omar is going to end up taking what is an extreme and destructive position. She does regularly. She is the Congress lady from Minnesota, I hope only for a few more months. But Ilhan Omar was on MSNBC, of course, trying to politicize, racialize the tragic and potentially criminal killing of George Floyd in Minnesota. Listen.
Thank you so much for having me. I mean, we're really, you know, heartbroken just watching our city set ablaze. It's quite horrifying for many to think of the needless death of George Floyd, another innocent man murdered by the police in our community. There is extreme frustration that we keep finding ourselves in this position as a city. And, you know, anger really is boiling over because justice still seems out of reach. And I believe, you know, today we will get the opportunity to sort of push for more peaceful protests, remind people that violence only begets violence. And, you know, it's important also for the police to recognize that more force is only going to lead to more lives lost and more devastation. The community needs to focus on protecting one another. And I think a community-centered solution to de-escalation, I believe, is going to need to be a priority for all of us.
Okay, a community-centered solution for de-escalation. First of all, talking about it that way indicates that the police officers who are in danger right now trying to defend peace and safety and property in Minnesota need to de-escalate somehow. I think that there is some criticism of the Minneapolis Police Department for de-escalating too much, for allowing these riots and the arson and the destruction of property to get out of hand. The thing that bothered me most about what Congresswoman Omar had to say is she says justice seems to be out of reach. How does she know, for goodness sake? Every responsible party, first of all, the attorney general in Minnesota, the state attorney general, who will be one of the people responsible here, is African-American. His name is Keith Ellison. Remember him? Her fellow member of the Islamic black community. And you also have in Minnesota, the public safety commissioner is black. And to say that justice is out of reach when it the president of the United States has already called for a special Justice Department investigation of this crime, this apparent crime. This is sad, and it's inappropriate. Let me go to your calls. We have a couple of calls waiting, and I appreciate your hanging on. Ryan in Salt Lake City, you're up first. Go ahead.
Hi, Michael. I was actually hoping to challenge your last guest, Dr. Reed. I understand he's not there, but he made the comment that he praised President Trump for originalist and constitutionalist judges. But then in the same breath, he turns around and talked about how eloquently Trump made the case to reopen churches. But the problem, and I know you agree with this, is he did so by saying he's going to overrule all the governors and force them to open, which seems to fly in the face of originalists and constitutionalists. And one of the reasons I've been so dedicated to your show, Michael, for 20 years is you're one of the last resources out there that doesn't just play one side or the other. You always call balls and strikes, and it's hard to find that nowadays.
I thank you. And I thank you for sticking with us. And you're, of course, entirely correct. I didn't bring that up. When Trump tweeted, and it was in one of his infamous tweets, he was taking a good case and a good cause and undermining it. He says, if the governors resist me, I'll overrule them. You're absolutely right, Ryan, is that originalism and constitutionalism means federalism, which means that each state has the right to supervise its own government, that it's not the federal government dominating what is decided in Salt Lake City or in Olympia, Washington, or other state capitals. I appreciate your call, and you're entirely correct in that inconsistency, I think, in part of what Dr. Reed was saying. I appreciate it. Jay in Shoreline, Washington. Jay, you're on the Michael Medved Show.
Thanks, Michael. I have just a quick comment. I love you, but Michael, you said at the very beginning, your opening monologue, that this individual, this black individual in Minneapolis, was killed. And I'm saying, what is your evidence that he was killed?
There's a video.
There's not a video that he was killed. There's a video that a cop was leaning on his neck. I've read some reports, and I'll tell you something. He was claiming that he had health issues. He needed a paramedic, before they even took him to the ground. All right? And so on the ground, he was saying he couldn't breathe. Just because the cop had his knee on his neck doesn't mean he had his knee on his trachea and the guy couldn't breathe.
Okay, there will be a criminal trial. And again, I'm not one to preempt the justice system from operating. But when somebody is saying, I can't breathe, and he's already in handcuffs and he's not resisting arrest, what possible explanation or justification could there be for Officer Chauvin, the cop involved here, to keep his knee on George Floyd's neck?
That's not the point. I'm not saying the cop was justified in doing that. I'm saying you can't determine right now that that is what killed the individual. You don't know.
No, of course, there has to be. Let me say that based upon the eyewitnesses and the evidence of the video, I think the presumption is quite reasonable that he died as a result of a knee on his neck that was not removed. Now, I'm sure that will be explored at great length in the trial. One of the problems that I have is some of the stuff that you're hearing right now, particularly some of the more extreme versions. We'll get to that later in the show. Are going to make it very hard for the officers involved, and they probably all four of them will be charged, the others as accessories. But it will be very hard for them to get a fair trial, because when you have so many prominent public officials already proclaiming the guilt, on that I think you're right, and you're right to call. Everything will be explored. However, and it will be explored, I think, in a courtroom, which is where it belongs. However, to try to say that it's inappropriate to say that he was killed, he didn't just die. He died as an apparent result, after he was handcuffed, of being taken to the ground with a knee on his neck. The officer's story, we'll hear about that at some point. Coming up on the Michael Medved Show, there's a big new study from Pew Research that says that when it comes to the death rates and infection rates from COVID-19, it's almost entirely localized in congressional districts that are represented by Democrats. Now, why would that be? Why would you have such a close correlation between a Democrat representing a district in Congress and that district having a very high rate of death and devastation because of the coronavirus? We'll also be speaking with John Fund. There is an ongoing conflict about mail-in ballots, and this, by the way, is about to hand President Trump, I think, one gigantic victory. No, not necessarily in the election, but in his war with Twitter. Because even though I think President Trump has gone way over the top in some of his dishonest tweets, particularly about Joe Scarborough, for Twitter, instead of responding to that, to respond to President Trump tweeting a matter of opinion about mail-in ballots by saying, oh, you have to check his facts. What are they thinking? The president's going to win this one. We will get to that and more with John Fund, also talking with Gordon Chang coming up about Hong Kong, all necessary to explore and confront in this greatest nation on God's green earth.